This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
So I understand that you've done some work with the WHO as well as the World Meteorological Office. Could you share what you were involved in?
As far as, which is closer to the picture, the work with World Meteorological Organization, actually the issue about biomass burning and especially forest fire in Southeast Asia is a major concern to the scientific community lately. So WMO is very interested to know exactly what is the situation of these biomass burning in the region and how this is going to affect the global climate, which I'll detail later. So they set up quite a number of monitoring stations, both satellite and aircraft measurements, to do these measurements around the Southeast Asia region. My role is mainly on the modeling, using computer simulations to simulate and study how these smokes or haze disperse under a biomass scenario. And so this is the a joint international collaboration with the WMO.
And what exactly is air pollution dispersion modeling? Because, it sounds like a very technical term. What exactly do you do?
Air pollution dispersion modeling is basically to use computer methods to understand and actually to calculate the pathways of, for example, like if you have a forest fire, where would the smoke go based on computer? Because number one, this is a much safer way to predict the scenario, and number two, it's also less costly, and you can do it, and you can do it almost on a predictive way. Otherwise, you have to wait for a fire and then do the measurements. So this is a state-of-the-art method, a scientific method, to understand how this air pollution moves from one place to another.
And how do you use this to predict the consequences of spread of toxic materials, for example, with what we're dealing with currently?
So basically, first of all, of course, you understand the topography or the what we call the geography of the area, and then you feed into the computer or with the computer program all the necessary meteorological data like wind speed, wind direction, everything. And then, of course, based on the scientific calculations, we will be able to predict, actually with a large degree of accuracy, how, for example, like in this case, the forest fire, how would the smoke move from one place to another and how would it affect the neighboring countries or regions?
How does this relate back to public health?
Well, number one, of course, the main concern about air pollution is that we want to know what is the personal exposure to air pollutants. In such case of biomass burning, in such large-scale biomass burning, we're talking about extreme exposure of humans to a number of pollutants, namely, for example, dust particles, which we call respirable particulate matter, ozone, and volatile organic compounds. All these three things are, in simple terms, bad to the health. For example, ozone and the dust particles will make respiration very, very difficult. And for those people who is vulnerable to respiratory disease, in the extreme case, it can cause quite a bit of trouble. Ozone also have problems with visibility, and the reasons why we use the word haze is because the presence of ozone will create a hazy atmosphere in which visibility lowers. The other pollutant is volatile organic compound, which is known to be, most of them are known to be carcinogenic, and prolonged exposure to volatile organic compound, or what we abbreviated as VOC, will be very harmful to human beings. So with all these studies, with whether it's the monitoring, surveillance, and calculations, we want to know, for example, what is the human exposure towards these biomass burning in such a episode or such a scenario, and we want to see if anything can be done to issue warnings to the citizens.
On that note, while we're talking about the nature of the particles, there are rumours circulating about it, with some saying that due to their nature, they will not be solvent, will continue to stay in our lungs and cause problems for us many years to come. Is there any truth in that? Would you happen to know?
The answer is yes and no. I mean, of course, I think there is a bit of dramatization and exaggeration towards it. Pollutants do stay in your body for a certain period of time. But unless, I mean, for an episode like this, actually the human body is actually also relatively resilient to toxic substances. And through various biological methods, we are able to take this out from our body. Of course, you don't want to have a prolonged exposure. For example, if you're dealing with it, if you are breathing in these kind of bad gases 365 days a year, of course, it's going to, these things is going to build up in your body. But on a single episode, for example, even for an episode like this, the body is able to uptake it and then will be able to release it back to the atmosphere by own metabolism.
So how hazardous is the haze really? I mean, because we're talking about, this is a 16-year high, of course, that's what everybody's discussing right now. Mm. How dangerous is it really?
Well, if you read the API, the Air Pollution Index, the maximum that it has reached is around 170-something. Well, if you make a comparison, actually, you know, for a single-day episode, you know, for breathing in the gas, in the extreme case, is like taking in like 2 or 5 packets of cigarettes a day for normal people. It's approximately equivalent in that sense. But of course, you're dealing with 1 or 2 days only. Okay. And in perspective, actually, compared to the most serious episodes that I am aware of, that is the 1997 episode, the air pollution index is actually not as high. I remember in that particular circumstance, the air pollution index is up to 600. So this time the situation is actually not as bad, and also the weather conditions also helps in dispersing the smoke relatively quickly. So having said that, for people who are vulnerable, especially towards a respiratory disease, it is obviously not healthy, and they are advised to stay at home and maybe put on a face mask to avoid extended exposure to these pollutants.
I want to go back to that point about API perhaps a little later in the conversation, but right now, what are some of the global issues being brought to the fore by forest fires? Because I understand that your research focuses on that.
The reason why the international community is interested in Southeast Asia and especially forest fire is this is actually not only a regional problem. If you have such an extensive and massive amount of forest fires or technically we call it a biomass burning, it actually affects significantly the global weather climate. I mean, just to give you a simple perspective, the smoke that it builds up actually will increase the cloud cover of the region. And hence, there would be more clouds and there is a larger chance of huge rainfall around the region. This, in fact, will significantly upset the global climate. And hence, actually, that's why the WMO comes in, because they are very interested to know how these regional scale events or episodes of such a massive scale would affect the international or the global climate. And we have actually evidences showing that this actually would upset a little bit the global climate in terms of temperature and in terms of rainfall distribution.
The smoke from the fires, of course, the fires which are burning in our neighbouring country, travel some distance to reach our shores. Does it change in quality at all, in
course,
the time?
Of course. Number one, as it travels, the concentration lowers. And then, of course, more importantly, because part of these forest fires comes from Borneo and also Sumatra, which goes across the sea. As the pollutant goes across the sea, because of moisture, because of humidity, it suffers from what we call rain out or wash out. The humidity will make the particle bigger, and eventually it settles onto the ocean. So after traveling for a bit of distance, the concentration will lower. And of course, as the concentration lowers and as the amount of pollutant decreases, the harm that it brings to human, of course, is much lower as well. Malaysia, in one way, is very much sheltered. Well, of course, maybe not so appropriately, but Malaysia is a peninsula surrounded by two very large seas, the Malacca Strait on the left and the South China Sea on the right. So as these smoke travels from these forest fires to the peninsula Malaysia, actually much of the smoke and much of the pollutant has already been washed out as a result. And so the harm has already is much smaller compared to the direct recipient of those residents in Sumatra and in Borneo.
I'm speaking today to Professor Andrew Chan. He's an Associate Research Dean at the Faculty of Engineering at a private university. We're discussing the haze and its effects on our health. Coming up, we learn more about the terms API and PSI. What do they really mean? On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is The Bigger Picture. I am Lee Chui Lin. Joining me via the phone today is Professor Andrew Chan. He's an Associate Research Dean at the Faculty of Engineering at a private university. He's also an expert on air pollution dispersion modelling. We're talking about something that's close to the heart of many Malaysians right now, the haze and its effects on our health. Professor, before we continue, I realise one thing. You know, we're currently in a state where every day we rely on these readings, and there are a lot of terms being associated with it, including API and PSI. Could you tell us what these two terms indicate?
Okay. API stands for Air Pollution Index. PSI stands for Pollutant Standard Index. So it is almost the same thing. It's just a matter of nomenclature due to historic reasons. All these API derived from the US EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, in which they measured all different pollutants, air pollutants in particular, and then they associate a number to it to give it to the public to tell how bad it is. To give you a simple perspective, anything hitting higher than 100 is considered dangerous, and so you issue a caution to the citizens.
And how are these measurements acquired?
Okay, in Malaysia, we actually have a very extensive monitoring network in almost each city. The Department of Environment have set up various monitoring stations to measure the concentration of various pollutant gases, namely, for example, dust particles, ozone, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, and so on. And then they will analyze these data and then calculate the so-called air pollution index and issue to the public.
For the sake of public health, how often do the measurements need to be updated? Because, you know, many of us are sort of feverishly looking at these maps and trying to keep up to date so that we know when it's safe to go out.
Okay. Malaysia actually has one of the most advanced surveying system in the world. And as far as I know, Malaysia has almost like 30 to 40 monitoring stations scattered around the country, in the peninsula and also in East Malaysia. These monitoring stations actually update the data almost on a real-time basis. So theoretically, every second there is a data from these measuring monitoring stations. Of course, for the sake of calculations, these API is released to the public every 8 hours of the day. Actually, namely at 4 p.m., 12 midnight and 8 a.m. in the morning. So they calculate it on an 8-hour cycle. And so, of course, these 8-hour cycles reflect the human activities profile of a typical human being. And so it is actually a very, very accurate and precise measurement.
And the gradations of the API go from good to hazardous. Can you talk us through what these different levels really indicate?
Okay. As I mentioned earlier, the most important number is 100 because in most of the countries of the world, they'll set up what we call an air quality objective, meaning that for one whole year, I do not want my air to, I want my air to maintain a certain level of acceptance. And they will, each country, because of various reasons, they will define a slightly different level. So, and that threshold of number, they will name it as 100 as API. And then, of course, they will make the gradation as a result of this. So whenever the number hits 100, it means that that year, that particular objective has been breached. And so, which means that that year we fail to live out our expectation on the air quality of the country. So from 0 to 50 is considered good, which is half of that 100 threshold. 51 to 100 is considered as moderate. And in actual fact, anything below 100 is considered safe to the public. 100 to 200 is classified as unhealthy. 200 to 300 is very unhealthy. And anything beyond 300 is considered hazardous and alarming, and you need a sort of immediate response to it. And so this is how it is gradated.
And what measures should be taken when faced with levels that are dangerous or hazardous?
Say again.
What immediate measures, as you point out, you know, there needs to be an immediate reaction. What is that immediate reaction?
Well, it depends on the people, on the person himself. Under most circumstances, even if the value of the API reaches 100, usually for the general public it is okay, because only under prolonged exposure to pollutant at such high level will create a long-term damage. But of course, there are people who has asthma, who is vulnerable to breathing problems, and who has inherent respiratory problems. They would be advised to stay at home and wear a face mask. And in particular, those face masks, which is called N95 face mask, which can sieve out almost 99% of the pollutants. So this will make them safer, and that is the advice that it is. But of course, in extreme situations, like when the API is more than 300, for example, in the 1997 episode, then yes, we should basically stop all activities because the air, all outdoor activities, because basically the air is, you can consider it hazardous and of immediate danger.
Is the reaction to the haze right now alarmist or appropriate? Because many people are just, you know, taking to social media, for example, to vent their frustration.
I understand the reason behind it. Of course, you know, from a scientific point of view, it might be a bit over-dramatized. First of all, as I have explained earlier, this time, the API is not that high compared to, in fact, even the 2005 episode, and of course the earlier 1997 episode. It is a big problem, but fortunately, as a matter of fact, today, as I'm doing the calculations and reading the data, the weather conditions in Southeast Asia is actually favorable for dispersion, and you actually notice that the smoke actually has dispersed quite rapidly for the past two, three days already. So this is not a major episode. Of course, should you be concerned? Of course, you should be concerned about this, and you should try to, especially for people of a young age and for the old age, they should stay at home. But I have also read news and, you know, read from the TV media that someone is leaving the country as a result. I think it is there is a bit of exaggeration about this. As a matter of fact, it's not actually that safe for air travel because of the smoke.
I want to talk about that as well, that because haze is, of course, something that is visible. That's the whole point. And there has also been a lot of advice to say, even if you do see less of it, you should still be wearing masks and so on. So how much might still be left in our immediate sort of atmosphere, even if we cannot see it anymore?
Well, This is a very good question, and this is actually quite scientific, because most of the air pollutants is invisible. I mean, the gas like, for example, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, they are air pollutants. They are also harmful to our health, but they cannot be easily visible. What you usually see would be ozone and dust particles, which in this case, this is what is happening. But it doesn't mean that if you're able to see haze, the air is very bad. It's just that the particular pollutant is maybe higher than those which is invisible. It doesn't mean that having visible haze, that the air is better or worse than you don't see it, because you might see a very, very clear sky, but it might contain invisible air pollutants such as sulfur dioxide and nitrogen dioxide or carbon monoxide, for example, in the city. So the visual effect of air pollutants is just one of the measures that people can make to see whether the air is good or bad, but that is absolutely not the total truth. So the most reliable one to gauge whether the air is good or bad is to read the air pollution index that is issued from the government.
We also currently celebrate the rain every time it comes down. But then there is also talk of the rain being acid rain, being harmful to us. What can you tell us about this?
Okay. In this particular case, the rain would actually really truly help to rain out or wash out the air pollutant, because from a forest fire point of view, most of the pollutants would be dust particles and they would be easily be rained out and washed out. So from a meteorological point of view, it is actually favorable to have rain to wash out these pollutants. And as I've mentioned, because of the massive amount of smoke that is built up, actually cloud cover will increase inevitably. And actually, usually after such an episode, there would be quite heavy downpours as a result of increased cloud cover and, of course, rainfall. The rain might probably is a bit acidic. But again, you know, acidity is a measure. So most, and it is also a bit confusing, because actually, in any case, even the air, even the rain, which is in clean air, is slightly acidic. So people should not be over-alarmed with the term, with the word acid rain. Only in extreme condition and prolonged condition that acid rain plays a part in our life. For example, you will see that there are some monuments or stone landmarks which is harmed by prolonged exposure to acid rain, where, you know, if it is exposed to the air near the factory. So that is of a concern. But for single episodes like this, I don't think it is a major issue.
You did address some of the issues, some of the health issues that could be caused by the haze, but perhaps you could just sum it up for us. What are some of the long-term effects on health that the haze might have, especially from a carcinogenic point of view?
Okay. From forest fire, as I've mentioned, the main pollutants that is generated is particles, ozone, and the volatile organic compound. Ozone and particles would actually cause respiratory problems. It inhibits breathing, and it also cause various cardiopulmonary disease. Whereas volatile organic compounds, in the long term, it will build up and they are carcinogenic. But let's not be an alarmist as a result of this. We are talking about one single episode, and unless you have a prolonged exposure to it, it is not going to create extreme harm to the people. Again, as I reiterate, if you're vulnerable to respirable diseases, then maybe it is important that you take care of yourself and wear a face mask and stay at home. But otherwise, one single episode of this is not going to create significant long-term health problems.
Some cities, such as Beijing, famously have very, very poor air quality all year round. How do governments and citizens alike learn to deal with a situation that seems so permanent?
Well, of course, you know, air pollution is a large issue, and it's not something that a respective citizen's reaction can deal with it. And of course, you also have to understand what is the origin of problems of each place. For instance, Beijing's problem is mainly because of the factories nearby, plus the desert sands from the nearby deserts from China. You can probably do something with respect to the factories by perhaps moving them away, shutting them down, and moving them to more remote locations. But you cannot do anything with regard to the sandstorms. And so every now and then, while we face the problem of biomass burning, Beijing will suffer from the sandstorm, which will attack them every once or twice a year, and they cannot run away with it. So there are several facets of it. From a human point of view, of course, from policy making, the government should do utmost to protect the people and to ensure that the air quality is good. This can be done by various policies, like moving the industries far away from the cities, good urban planning, and of course, good practices in, for example, transportation and various things. And of course, you know, stop open fire burning in the city. But otherwise, we also have to understand that there are more natural reasons or natural sources of air pollutants. For example, dust storm and, for example, volcano eruption. And this, you probably cannot do anything about this.
Earlier, you referenced the N95 mask. There has been a lot of confusion about the efficacy of the masks. How much do they really help to filter?
Well, actually, it's just like these air filters or air purifiers that you go and buy in the market. They are actually quite effective if they are true to the words and if they are really made up to the standard. An N95 face mask is able to filter 99.97% of the air pollutants, especially the dust particles. So, an N95 face mask is originally designed and invented for the sake of nuclear exposure and also for medical reasons. So it is a very, very efficient filter with respect to air pollutants.
But it is important to get the right kind of mask.
Yes, but of course, sometimes if you just get a face mask, it just helps to filter off part of the particles. For those which you can get in the supermarket, they are just normal surgical face masks, and they will not do anything other than filtering off dust particles. On the other hand, some other face masks can help to filter a bit of the ozone, the gaseous pollutant as well. On the other hand, the face masks are not expected to deal with, for example, a virus or a respiratory epidemic.
And what are some of the other socio-economic impacts of dealing with an air pollution problem such as the haze?
Actually, quite a lot. And this is also what the international community is very interested. Of course, the immediate reason for studying air pollution is association with health. But other than health, there are lots of things, like, for example, visibility. Like places like Hong Kong or Shanghai or Beijing, these metropolises, they have constant air problem, and the visibility is actually quite low. And this makes the aesthetic of the place bad, and therefore it lowers tourism and lowers the chances of having them staging major events. We also acknowledge that there is a drop of productivity as a result of poor air, and therefore people tend to, there is also an associated medical cost, an increase of medical costs associated with bad air pollutions. So there are actually quite a large number of things that we can talk about. The other thing is, of course, when the air is, what we mentioned earlier, acid rain, and this actually would corrode buildings and landmarks. And of course, again, there is an economic cost that accompanies air pollution as a result.
Ultimately, Professor, what message would you like to leave us with on the subject of haze and its effects on public health?
Number one, don't panic. I think some of the reactions in the media is, I think, as I use the word, over-dramatized and exaggerated. This is a one-off episode. It is not, unless it becomes a prolonged issue, it is not favorable, but this is not something that you should make an alarmist or doomsday scenario out of it. Having said that, of course, the government of Malaysia and actually Southeast Asia should actually come up with concrete and substantial policies and practices which ensure that these biomass burning should not continue in such a massive scale. We also have to understand that, of course, we know what is the reason behind these burning, because they need to clear the ground for the newer crops, and of course the palm trees especially. We should think about newer ways and more sustainable way to deal with it rather than just open fire burning. So there are actually quite a bit that we need to think about, especially from a government's point of view, that we should work with, in this case, Indonesia, Thailand, and the rest of Southeast Asia, to ensure that we don't create a trouble to everyone whenever there is a season for these regeneration of palm tree fields.
Thank you, Professor. I've been speaking to Professor Andrew Chan. He's an Associate Research Dean at the Faculty of Engineering at a private university. He's also an expert on air pollution dispersion modelling. We've been talking about the haze and its effects on our health on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.